Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 78, the importance of being earnest, or getting a girl, doing the math, and graduating on time.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Troy Patterson, and with me is the now two-time upcoming presenter, Mr. Sean McGarr.
Funny how he works that in there.
That's right. Sean will be presenting at the Michigan Joint Educators Conference. And Sean also heard this week that Sean will be presenting at NMSA this fall. So kudos and congrats to Sean.
In Detroit, too, I hear. Because if you look really closely, your name's right after mine. Okay. We're looking forward to it.
It's the end of the year. You can probably tell it's the end of the year. Okay. we're kind of in that end of the year vibe as well. I think Sean's eyes are a little glazed over. It looks like he's been checking a few papers and tests and other wonderful writings from the students.
If I hear the three letters NCA in a sentence, there will be film at 11.
of course, I'm trying to finish up scheduling and room changes, which are always a fantastic time of the year when I've been offered several first children if we just don't have to move rooms.
Your house is going to get full fast.
I don't want any more children, so I'm good with that. Hey, you know, they came across some things kind of take a while to get from the bottom of the desk to the top. And this was one that I thought was kind of cute, even though it's summer. Thinking back to those snowing times. And this is actually a high school announcement, not so much middle school.
Okay.
But I thought it was interesting.
Some middle schoolers.
Yeah. You know, it had been snowing for a while, and there's an announcement that came over the intercom. Will the students who parked on University Drive please move their cars so we may begin plowing? Mm-hmm. Which is okay, you know, kids in parking right spot or whatever. But 20 minutes later, there was an additional announcement. Will the 900 students who went to move 14 cars please return to class? Got to be careful when you make general announcements there, you know. It's one of the reasons that we don't do announcements over the loudspeaker very often unless it's after school or before school.
It's ironic that you let off with that. I had two students come up to me this week and asked about why they came to me and asked this. I have no idea, but they came and asked me about what they would have to do in order to get, you know, permission to park their car in the parking lot next year, because 2 months before school lets out next year, they'll be eligible to drive.
Oh, nice.
So
that's an issue.
I've never had that question asked before.
That's one of the things I actually try to avoid. I try to avoid having to have extra parking spaces for the students.
You're parking way out there.
So, hey, there's this one. This one actually is a middle school teacher. This is a middle school one. Okay. Being interactive is very important, and real world connections are important. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they don't quite go exactly the way but they do give you a chance for learning and opportunities to understand. So there was a teacher who was giving a lesson on circulation of blood, and she's trying to make the matter clear and says, "Now, students, if I stand on my head, the blood, as you know, would run into it, and I would turn red in the face." And the kids all say, "Uh-huh." And so the teacher says, "Well, then why is it that I'm standing in upright in the ordinary position, the blood doesn't run into my feet?" And one of the students shouted, "It's because your feet ain't empty." good opportunity for discussion on that one. I did. You know what? I wonder if that was a student who was in the teacher's advisory.
You know, that would be an excellent place for that conversation. Anyways, yes, it'd be a great place to have a conversation. Let's talk about advisory just a little bit. We should have make some sort of musical lead-in. Advisory.
We should.
Yeah, that'd be nice to have a
little. Although that would probably require me learning how to include that. I know I have the software to do it. I just don't know that I have the. Maybe this summer I will work on that.
In just a slightly sparkly moment, you know how we try to record sometimes. We do presentations and we go out to other places and whatnot.
Right.
I finally have something that'll help us out. I found a mixing board just for podcasting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that I think we'll give a try. So we might, you know, record some of our stuff or snag people and do quick interviews, you know, and see how that goes. So anyway, back to advisory. The Special Olympics is campaigning to get the R word out of students' vocabulary, and they're asking students to go on their site and take a pledge, to spread the word, to stop the word is their campaign.
Cool.
It's really cool. It doesn't take a lot of time. It's really quick. It's a way that kids can – a lot of times kids will make these commitments and not follow through on them. So don't hold your breath on these and, you know, don't go in with huge expectations. But it is a way to kind of get them to think about it. And obviously nothing lasts forever, but it's great. It's a way for them to
– It also leads to – it could also lead to some good discussion about other words that are derogatory and – why it is that, you know, we may not want to use them.
Yes, that's true.
Because we have other words. That word doesn't tend to be really a big issue in our building. But the word that we have that we really try really hard to prevent, to stop, to put an end to, revolves around the fact that a lot of our kids are immigrants.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, you know, we work on that.
Another advisory idea, and that comes in, we can also tie in with a Twitterverse thing, is I found something on the Twitterverse from one of the people I follow in my PLN. I'm a lurker at the moment, or the past few weeks. It's a lot easier to be a lurker than it is a participant, but you know that from being in classrooms and whatnot, because it's just like in the classroom. It's
sure.
It's, you know, requires more effort on the student's part to participate in a class than it does to lurk and just listen from others. But that aside, there is, and it's, oh, here it is right here. It's called the Fantastic Contraption Game. Russell Tarr posted this, and he uses real world physics. It could be used in a physics lesson, I imagine. But you know how we talked about how advisory is – one of the purposes of advisory is to get the kids to stop focusing on everything that's happening outside of school and tune their focus more into what's going on in school or in a singular fashion. This is a great way. It's very absorbing. It helps you tune out a lot of things that are going on because you have to spend a lot of focus to accomplish the tasks in this physics game, this fantastic contraption game. You have to build contraptions to get objects from one zone or area to another zone or area. And it starts really simple. You move one thing from one square to another, and there are wheels. You can either go forwards or backwards. You have to pick the right wheel. There are neutral wheels. There are power axles or power trains that will cross other power trains and some that won't, some made of water, made of sticks, that sort of thing, fluid, not fluid. And you have to move the object from the one box to another box, and you have to figure out a way to build a vehicle to get it from one place to another. Do be aware, it can be memory intensive, and there are things you can do to kind of reduce that load on your computer. And it all is also very addictive. I spent the 40 minutes before the podcast just playing with that little program.
That's why we were starting late today. I wondered.
So... it really is. It's a ton of fun. You're going to want to sit and use it and play with it just as much as the kids are. But
so
the
I
beautiful
should,
thing about it.
So I should click on it now is what you're telling
don't
me.
Don't go there now. Troy will do this if I some of these sites. Oh, yeah, it is fun. See you in a little while. This website is that because it does require you to figure things out and problem solve within the screen itself, it's easier to tune a lot of things that are happening outside of school out, And then from there, then you can launch into what you're what you know the course for the day, or go from day to day. And it's easier to zone out problems of real life that are coming up. So there's an idea. Do try it out. Let us know what you think about it. Tell us if it works for you or if you tried it out. Let's see what else in the Twitterverse. You know how some writing teachers will have students create mind maps or image maps or concept maps, and then they do their writing. Well, somebody's figured out a way to do the writing and then turn it into a concept map. And Russell Tarr has also provided a convert to text to mind map link. I posted that there for us. Barb's One has a story maker link. I think KJ Hacks from Second Life is it's on his blog. It's very simple. It's very easy to use. It's very straightforward. And it looks like a lot of fun. But the kids can build a story maker, develop a story, build storyboarding right there on that website before they do any sort of writing or filmmaking.
And, you know, storyboarding is really, really important. And we don't tend to teach storyboarding, at least from my experience. Teachers don't teach storyboarding at all. And storyboarding can really help the kids visualize what they're doing and really create some more complex and more complete stories. I listened to an interview with Peter Docter, who was the director for Up from Pixar.
Oh, okay.
And he was talking about the process, and they do very elaborate storyboards before they start doing anything. And they spend a lot of time with that, and I think that's one of the reasons that you get the kind of quality that you get. And I just think that's something that we don't teach kids at all, and maybe we could and should.
Well, and there's a lot of time that goes into storyboarding. They've done some background video on behind the scenes at Pixar and that sort of thing. And the rooms that they show with the storyboards are huge. And like some of the ones at Disney are like entire lengths of walls and hallways that they post storyboards on. So especially if you've got a visual learner, this is going to be a great way for them to help map out. I was reading – I can't remember where I was reading, which author, because I'd love to give them credit for this, but they said that 90% of writing is planning. It's just figuring out what you're going to say, what you need to say. And this is a great way to do that. Mm-hmm. Especially, like I said, visual learners or visual writers. How much would you like to get paid? How much is a teacher worth to you, Troy? How much is a teacher? Now, you don't have to be,
it's not fair. I do have to tell
he's
you.
He's a principal.
Yeah, I'm a principal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's a good question for him. How much is a teacher worth? How much would you be willing to pay a teacher?
Well, here's the thing is that I actually have a friend who is a principal who's moving to New York.
Okay.
And he's moving to a charter school. He's trying to get into a charter school in New York where they pay teachers over $100,000 a year.
Okay.
With the caveat, if your kids don't do well on tests, you're done. So you can make a lot of money, but if your kids do not perform well on the test, you don't have a job the following year.
So it's a one-shot deal in some cases.
Right. The jobs themselves are very competitive. They look at they want to know how your kids have done on standardized tests previously. Mm-hmm. And, you have to go in there with a portfolio and that kind of stuff.
So, let's go back to the question. I'll let you off the hook. That was a good non-answer, by the way.
Thank you.
Let's see, Mark, put that in my portfolio. Ways. And when I grow up and become a principal, all right. So there's a charter school that has hired 8 teachers at $125,000 a year. That's a pretty nice chunk of change, no matter where you are in the United States. Mm-hmm. And Karen Chichester has posted a link to that, and a number of other people have been talking about it on Twitter as well. So I posted a link for you to go look at it. You can formulate your own opinions on that. But I just thought it was interesting. 8 teachers at $125,000 a year, and $125,000. Someday when I grow up Griff Buddy has retweeted Dean Chersky, and it was about an article about justifying Twitter. We might talk about this in our presentation, so I'm going to save that information. You have to come and hear our presentation in order to get this wonderful information on that, or to click on the link here in the show notes. Web 2.0 for low-income minority students. There's a link here, Simple K-12, which is a curriculum site, has posted a link for some opportunities for minority students there. Well, let's see. Student-generated video flashcards for environmental science on Funnelbrain. There's a link there. Cool way to collaborate. Students can collaborate and build these things together. The environmental science is an example of it, but you can send your students to build these video flashcards over there as well.
And there are a lot of flashcard generators online. So if you're looking at anything where you want kids to memorize things or to be able to recall facts, foreign languages especially, there mm-hmm. tend to be a lot of stuff already up there. But foreign languages and some science terms seem to be the big areas. But there's several online flashcards that you can use and have the kids use.
Angela Myers and Will Richardson has talked about this link, but Angela Myers posted a current link to the 11-year-old difference maker. She's posted a web blog or a WordPress blog called 25 Days. It started out as a way to honor her uncle who passed away and has turned into 16 or 18 or 20 months. And she keeps finding these things to do. Lots of stuff there. That's where we got the link for the advisory one, by the way. But there's lots of ideas there. If you're looking for ways to community service opportunities, because some mm-hmm. states are going to require community service learning, but there's some great stuff there to help participate in. And she's just she's 11 years old. She's a fifth, sixth grader, somewhere in there. So things that, could inspire your kids to do some stuff in advisory or in their curriculum. How about some shout outs?
How about
shout out to Griff Buddy, who recommended MS Matters, our Twitter handle, to Mr. Tweet. She said they produce a great weekly podcast for middle school educators.
Yay.
And posted a link to that as well. I'm gonna edit for her right there. Cool. It's driving me nuts. Language arts teacher here is going nuts, sitting there watching that, going, I gotta fix it.
I was too, but and if you'd like a shout out, there's an easy way to get a shout out. Well, not you, Sean.
Oh, I was going to say, you can't get a shout out. Being in the show,
I think that would be just a little
self-serving.
It's self-serving and crossing the borders of some ethics somewhere that I'm sure was.
It's the same reason that people can't win their own prizes on their own show, right?
That's right.
Yeah, it's the same logic.
That's right.
Yeah, I got
same
it.
Logic. Yeah. And that is to simply go to the website, middleschoolmatters.com, and post a comment. Just click on the little link there that says comment. Or go to iTunes and post a review of the show. We'd love to hear from you. Or you can send us an email at middleschooleducators@gmail.com. And we'll get it and we'll try to respond and get some information back and put you in the runnings for the shout out as well.
Cool.
And that would be good news.
Very good news.
Yes. You know what else is good news?
I hear girls are doing pretty good at math. Is that good news?
Yes, absolutely. That's good news. There's there's been a long debate about girls and math and whether they can do it and whether they can't do it. And there was some studies that showed that girls can do as well as boys in math on average, but cannot excel in the way that males can. So there were studies showing that, girls can do okay in math, but they're not going to be the Wile E. Coyote super geniuses in math. And Larry Summers, who as president of Harvard University, said in 2005 that biological differences could explain why fewer women became professors of mathematics. This is now a response that Summers, by the way, is now chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors for President Barack Obama. give a second for that to sink in. But what the new survey, the new study says is, quote, we conclude that gender inequity, not lack of innate ability or, in quote, intrinsic aptitude, unquote, is the primary reason fewer females than males are identified as excelling in mathematics performance in most countries, including the United States. And this is from Janet Hyde and Janet Mertz from the University of Wisconsin. They did a statistical analysis, and looked at how females were performing relative to males at the high end, 95th percentile or above, and the profoundly gifted level. I like this, the one in a million type level. Countries with greater gender equity are also the ones where the ratio of girls to boys doing well in math is close to equal. So it looks like they have, if the girls have the same kind of opportunities and the same expectations, they tend to do as well as the boys. And they say that at the top levels, disparities persist, and some experts have said this is the greater male variability theory. The idea is that males in general are more likely to score both extremely high and extremely low on tests than girls are. But Mert said that, that's not true. So, go ahead.
Well, two conversations came up this week to kind of tie in with this. We're talking about creating single gender classrooms just for this mathematical reason. One of our teachers is talking that if you do single gender classrooms, it doesn't hurt the boys, but you do see an increase in the girls' mathematical scores. And so he's talking about proposing that we just create a class, pilot it, try it, see how it goes, and see if we like it. Second of all, I heard a very interesting interview on NPR this week about Russian women. Not, you know, apples, oranges, not necessarily a correlation. But they were talking about how a lot of Russian women want to be perceived, not necessarily that it's true, but want to be perceived as being lesser in subjects like this, because then it gives them that, you know, aura of helplessness, and therefore the guys, you know, get something from it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it was actually, and that wasn't necessarily the point. The point was that it was being encouraged and promoted in Russia by the women as a way, you know, that they wanted this. They wanted to do this. I'm not necessarily saying I buy the article, but that's an interesting difference in a different cultural difference, I guess, when consider this and those other things in there. But so let's touch on the single gender classroom idea. Would you use this as a principle? Would you try this in your building as a way to make maybe filter out some of the gender differences? Or do you feel that it's just as important to have both boys and girls in the same classroom, a heterogeneous classroom, for maybe social reasons or other reasons?
Well, it's interesting because one of the classes that I took this last spring, winter, there was somebody in there, and their school does segregate the girls from the boys at least part of the year in order to address some of their needs. I personally have mixed feelings about it. I think and I hate to say this, but so much comes back to the teacher. I think if the teacher creates the environment where kids can be successful and addresses the needs of boys and girls, then I think you can see positive growth there, and also learning that, you know, this is how you stand up for yourself. This is quote, the real world, unquote. Doesn't mean that I wouldn't open up more conversation about it, but the kicker for me has always been, because you know, I have had some people ask me about it, and the kicker is always when you look at them and you go, okay, that means you have a class full of boys too. Well, how about if I take the girls and somebody else can have the boys? Because they're concerned that you have a classroom full of boys, you're going to have all of the behavior issues, you're going to have all of that. And that usually kind of puts a bit of a kibosh on it.
Yeah, and one of the things mentioned in the proposal for our building is that the teacher would then have to teach two different ways, because there are ways to teach the girls and there are ways to teach the boys. And that was one of the reasonings, was that if you do that, then you can focus on those techniques that really, really work for the girls, and it really, really won't matter for the boys, because the whole strategy or technique is not going to hurt them anyway. All you're doing is emphasizing the positive side for the girls. So,
and it is, because one of the things that we're now looking at addressing more and more is actually the achievement of the boys in reading, because boys at middle school tend to not do as well in reading or writing as girls do, because girls read and write more. And we haven't noticed, as far as standardized testing goes, a big disparity in the math achievement level of our boys and our girls. So I would be afraid of solving a problem that doesn't exist. What I'm saying by that is, in our experience, it may be more of a high school where that issue really kicks in versus middle school. But it could start in middle school too.
If you can do that for math for boys and girls, then it would, you logically follow, you might do that for language arts for the boys and girls, if the boys are going to benefit greatly from having a boy-centered instructional process, even though it's not going to hurt the, because one of the things that language arts teachers will talk about, and I'll only belabor this a little longer, is that boys will read books about boys. They won't read books with girls being the centerpiece, the main character, whereas girls, you know, will read if it's boy or girl. It doesn't matter if it's who the center character is. In other words, you have a similar issue where you're not going to hurt the girls by changing the classroom structure, but you might improve the boys.
But I think that you're bringing up something that we've been discussing, is that if you look at the literature that tends to be addressed in language arts, it tends to be much more touchy-feely, much more things that girls would be in tune with or associated with or more comfortable with. And I say that as somebody who ran out of language arts classes in high school. I went a semester without in language arts because I liked language arts so much. But lots of the stories that we teach in middle school and high school, lots of the literature is either really the higher order kinds of stories that aren't going to engage your traditional stereotypical boy, or they involve, you know, lots of girls and that kind of stuff. So there's not as much that is directly tied to the stereotypical boy life and getting them involved in the story. You're always going to have your kids who are good readers and your boys that are good readers and are going to be, you know, involved in those stories. But it's my question becomes, so if we change some of the content and we consciously addressed the interest and needs and desires of some of those boys, could we do the same thing? Could we differentiate within the class and provide multiple opportunities for kids to see things that are more like them without separating out the kids all the time?
If we really want to open this up and get a lot of hits on the website, we just start talking about Basel versus level, you know, reading rhymes. And that'll just give us all kinds of... We could be here for hours if that's the case.
There you go.
So, yeah.
So, but that does bring in the, you know, a lot of the factors of how much do we segregate kids out too, because the research also shows that heterogeneous classrooms can show more growth than if you track out the A, B, and C kids. You know, when you track out those A, B, and C kids, you're just relegating them to a life of always being behind. And that's what we used to see. Mm-hmm. So, but if you have a comment on that, we'd love to hear from you. Just click on that comment or send us an email or even an audio comment. And we'd love to get those. I know Robert Belfance.
Am I close? This is why I let you pronounce everything.
Oh, God. Robert Belfance has name came up in news and events a little while ago. Mm-hmm. And he has authored a report called Putting Middle Grade Students on the Graduation Path, a Policy and Practice Brief from the Everyone Graduates Center and Talent Development Middle Grades Program. He really needs longer titles and longer groups title names to be associated with. And this is posted by NMSA. And this is an interesting read. This is a pretty short read, too, especially if you skim it. And it's set up so that you can skim it. But there was... It's interesting because it really points to the power and the influence of middle school. Now, the research, there's going to be some criticism of the research, like there always is, because there is no research that's perfect. But this works is centered out of Philadelphia, and they followed several cohorts for Philadelphia, and they found four crucial factors that could tell whether kids were going to graduate from high school on time. So what they did is they looked at these four crucial factors in sixth grade. And sixth grade was very predictive as to whether they were going to graduate from high school on time or not. Hmm. The four factors are failing math is factor one, failing English / reading, factor two, attending school, factor three, and factor four is behavior. And they looked at it as a final, poor final behavior grade. And here's, in the attendance they looked at was less than 80% of the time. Fewer than one in four of these students with at least one of these risk factors would graduate 1 year past on-time graduation. So if you only had one, you were okay. But if you have multiple, it really kicks up. And I lost that section. So they look at those things and how impactful it's going to be in terms of graduating from high school. And essentially what they're saying is one of the big things was not just identifying it in middle school, but intervening in middle school. Critical attendance thresholds, they use 90% and 80%. And basically what they say is that, and this was not a big surprise to anybody, I don't think, the number of days a student misses and how his or her attendance compares with that of peers signal that a student is not fully engaged and is in danger of falling off the graduation path. That's just a funny image. Sorry. Whoa! There you went. Mild but sustained misbehavior appears to have an independent effect on graduation odds. In other words, not paying attention in class, acting out, not getting along with teachers in sustained fashion signal disengagement. Left unaddressed, behaviors that typically might generate a low mark for conduct or multiple behavior referrals knock students off the graduation path. Funk. Thus, schools and districts that do not have the data to capture these interactions in a systematic and cumulative fashion ultimately miss some students who are clearly signaling they are off track. Students who fall off track in the sixth grade tend to have one or two off-track indicators. Relatively few sixth graders have three or four indicators. Then those are the failing math, science, math, language arts, attendance, and being disruptive. And it also was kind of interesting because they said the earlier the students develop off-track indicators, the lower their graduation odds appear to be. So the earlier you see that is when you can predict the possibility of them graduating goes down. Again, earlier you intervene, the better off that you are. Students who come every day, you'll love this one. Students who come every day, behave and get good grades, graduate in high numbers.
I wish that they get paid for that. You know, how much was funded just for that little statement? Right
there? I don't know.
And the cynic in me wants to know. I caught that as I was skimming through.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what, you know, our parents even told us, you know. It seems to follow a logical thought. Now that's not, I'm not critiquing it. That's kind of like one of those. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
You know, and that's their starting position. And then they're going to move from there. But,
right. And remember a core piece of this is in high poverty, right. Schools. And so what they're basically saying is, look, even in high poverty schools, if kids do this, if you can get kids to do this, if you can get kids here, then that's the goal. That's where you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that also talks about the importance of teachers as well. I'm hoping, because I read this a little while. I read this earlier this week. Yes.
It talks about
I don't have
quality.
To do post-production. and this I thought was powerful. If for two of the 3 years students were in classrooms in which the average student witnessed more than a year's growth in time, they were considerably more likely to close achievement gaps. Looping.
Mm-hmm.
I think looping can be very, very powerful. Teachers know the kids and give them more than a year. The key here, though, is you have to loop with a good teacher. Because if you loop with an ineffective teacher, then
you've done greater damage.
You just, right.
Yeah. So given the conditions we have today and there was one article you were going to look at with teacher evaluations, which
yes.
ties in with this. Be a nice segue to that one. You know, schools have a difficult time getting rid of teachers like that. Plus, the system is set up so that teachers kind of have to wait their time to get into positions that they may be more skilled at, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got a number of factors to fit in to try to get students into teachers that fit for their – maybe the best word is that are a best fit for that student. How are you going to adjust for that? I ask the administrator. This is called put the administrator on the spot.
He asked rhetorically.
yeah, that was it.
Yeah, that's it. You're asking that one rhetorically. I don't know if we're going to get time to have time to get to the article.
Oh, no, and really, that's the – Well, even then, just that question is a whole nother show in and of itself, because that answer is so involved and so long. You know, the National Middle School Association has even come up with pre-service teaching standards saying if you meet this, then you'd be considered a high-quality teacher. And the U.S. Department of Education is even saying the quality of teacher has the greatest impact on student achievement. And a number of other places have said, NCATE has even said, the quality of the teacher is the greatest determining factor in the classroom. We've talked about it on the show before as well. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes more of a finding the teacher the best fit for the classroom, taking all those multiple variables and finding the best possible line of best fit, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yes. Taking into consideration lots of other things.
Yes.
And some of the things that we should take into consideration as we're trying to put students on the graduation path.
Sorry.
That's okay. I'm usually the one with the sparkly moments. So, but I think there's some key recommendations in here that I just want to kind of throw out there, especially for those people who are on NCA committee and writing school improvement plans and all that. Schools... They deal with those issues again. So they take a look at attendance, and here's a recommendation. Schools must measure attendance in informative and actionable manners. And this is just not simply recording attendance, but keeping track of how many students have good attendance. That is, those who miss 5 or fewer days a year. Those who are moderately absent, missing between 10 and 19 days a year, and chronically absent, 20 or more, and extremely chronically absent, 40 days or more. 2, take measures to increase the number of students with good attendance and decrease the number who are chronically absent. Okay. 3, recognize good attendance regularly through public acknowledgement and social rewards. And that's something that I think I personally need to work on as well. And they say positive peer pressure can also be activated by recognizing not only good individual but collective successes as well.
By social rewards, what might be some examples of that? Because one of the things that I struggle with is intrinsic versus extrinsic rewards. Uh-huh. Giving a piece of candy or a little slipper tag to go get something in a box somewhere. You know, that's not a necessarily sincere effort. But, a small word of praise, which doesn't necessarily cost me anything, but is so invaluable to some kids. It's more important than a piece of candy. And it's that whole relationship thing we've talked about in other shows before. So when you think of social rewards, we're talking non-physical, right?
I think kind of, they don't specifically, give examples within here. But here's one of the things that I think I would look at. A lunchtime pizza party, which you could look at as a physical reward, but the key is a lunchtime pizza party with teacher that they really like, with the principal, with the counselor, with an adult who cares, so that they get an interaction, and not 50 kids at once, but... or smaller, where you get and you're sitting there and you're eating pizza and you're just conversing and you're giving them that attention that I think is very powerful. I guess that would be one of my examples. So, yeah, there's a physical part involved in pizza, but I think the real reward part isn't necessarily the pizza. It's the sharing with an adult.
The opportunity for interaction. And that's the part I think that I would support. But just spinning a thing at the front of a lunchroom, pulling out a tag and rewarding them with an object or something like that, it seems to me that it's a temporary effect. And, one in 1,000 odds or one in
– whatever.
However long – how many tickets are put in the bucket, there's not a strong chance of it. It loses its efficacy is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Also, they say separate attendance from course performance. Be perceived as safe and engaging places. Mm-hmm. And here's one that I think is going to be real fun. High engagement electives that provide avenues for short-term success and positively recognize asymmetrical skill levels. So, yeah, it's the whole electives and what they can do. Be engaged in safe, engaging places. The second part is belief, behavior, and effort. And that's where the high engagement electives come in. Activities that honor and use middle grade students' desire for adventure and camaraderie. Recognition at both the individual and group level for positive behavior. Which, again, getting those positive things out. And it's one of those things that I keep trying to tell people is, you know, we focus frequently on the troublemakers or the things that are going wrong or the whatever. And we miss out on the vast majority of the kids who are doing the right things and are making good decisions and are turning their homework in and are doing good stuff. And I think we need to recognize them. And that's something that I need to do a much better job in as well, a much, much better job of. Teaching organizational and self-management skills. I think that's really, really big. I tried to bring in some of the Stephen Covey stuff, and actually it's his son. I can't remember his son. Sean Covey.
Sean Covey.
I don't know why I couldn't remember Sean. but I couldn't remember Sean. But Sean Covey tried to bring some of his stuff in, and I would have liked to have seen it a little more impact from the teachers on that. Course performance, encouraging quality coursework, may require new forms of assessment. And assessment, I think, is one of those things where we as educators need to work a whole lot more in unison and do more development and more work with, because I think teachers need to have more assessment background in their pocket, so to speak. In understanding what assessments do and which ones do what and how to do good assessments and how to write good assessments. I mean, there's people that spend their entire life just trying to write good assessments. And here we're taking teachers and asking them to do the development of lessons, understand the content, understand the age level of the kid, understand the affective needs, understand professional roles, understand their professional duties, and write good assessments, and then take those assessments and use those assessments. It's a big job. I think we need to do a better job of helping teachers understand what kind of assessments to write and to use. Accept and acknowledge the implication of course grades being more predictive of eventual success than test scores. Create developmentally appropriate high school class/college readiness indicators that are meaningful and engaging to middle grade students and understood by parents. There's a big project. And get extra help right. And then they go on to talk about early warning and intervention systems, focus on effective intervention, not just identification. Match the resources to the student needs. Recognize and build on student strengths. So don't just say, you're bad at this, you're getting to work on this, but work off the strengths. And here's a huge one. Provide time, training, and support to teachers for implementing early warning and intervention systems. And I think that's just something as educators and as leaders, we haven't done as good of a job as we need to. Evaluate the effectiveness of interventions, and getting the ratio of skilled adults to students in need right. So, and then they talk about a lot of challenges as well. And that this is crucially important. So this is a nice, it is a nice document. It is, it's only about 13 pages. Mm-hmm. So it's not incredibly long. It's got lights, you know, lots of nice bullets. Strongly suggest people take a read through it and see how it is that we can implement it at our schools, share it with others that you know, and have a nice little discussion about it. So, okay.
Yeah, good article.
Yeah, and I really would appreciate some comment on that and feedback on that as well. And then we skip the other 12 articles that I've posted here, and we look at the events and happenings.
Oh, yeah.
Our first happenings, our first events are Sean is presenting at two places.
No, you notice I didn't put that on there. The National Middle School Association is looking for an editor for the Research and Middle Level Education Journal. I nominate Troy. He'd be my first choice there for that. The annual conference information is posted there on our events and happenings. That's going to be November 5th through 7th, 2009. We don't know what day Troy is presenting yet, so when we find that out, we will let you know. But individual registration is open. Presenter registration is not yet open. Michigan Association of Middle School Educators is putting together a bus for a trip to Indianapolis. Make sure you email Teresa Sutherland for information on that trip. It looks like it's going to be around $60, which is cheaper than you can drive there yourself.
And I think we actually have that information, so I think we can post it.
Okay, we'll do that then. Yeah, I saw it in an email, so
yeah.
Maybe we'll put it in the – I'll make a special part here of the thing, or I might put a individual post on it up there. Let's see. Oh, conference – the NMSA 09 conference connections are up there. Stay connected before, during, and after the conference. Start your packing list for the conference using packwiz.com. And you'll notice on the NMSA 09 conference connection, there's a link to your middleschoolmatters.com. Keynote speakers for NMSA 09 have been announced. Daniel Pink. I also put his political connections on there because there was some question about some other things we put up there with political connections. And Rick Wormley is closing, which should be very interesting this year.
And I noticed you didn't put his political connections up there.
I didn't bother to go look for him. We got dogged on our political connections for isit.org, which is a group that
yes, I remember that
presents or does some stuff at NMSA, and I used a couple of the videos this year, and I'll say that we'll say that for another show. I got a few choice words there, but it's nowhere near as invective as that person was trying to lead us to believe.
Yes.
Matter of fact, if anything, it goes the other direction. I wish there were some things that they had, I think they glossed over and should have covered, and they didn't do it. But let's see. The ISTE Eduverse talks are being recorded. There are wonderful, lots of wonderful sessions there. Go take a look at that and look at the archives. We are providing a link to Classroom 2.0's Ning blog and their archived content and their Illuminate sessions. This week's discussion is on Google search tips. You're welcome to look at that.
Ooh,
and Second Life isn't putting Second Life isn't posting up necessarily individual topic and topics on their bulletin board, but they do have their regular Tuesday meetings. So pop over there and just duck your head in there and see what the events are for each Tuesday night. Don't forget Thursday night socials.
Absolutely. Okay. And once again, drop us a note. We'd love to hear from you. Drop us an email. Send us a smoke signal. Give us just a little communication. Go to the website, which is middleschoolmatters.com. Head on over to your email client and drop us a quick note or an audio comment. Mm-hmm. It's at middleschooleducators@gmail.com. Or head on over to iTunes and post a review of the show for us. We would love to hear from you, and rumor is that everyone who gives us 5 stars gets a surprise, a wonderful surprise in their life. So it'd be a good thing to do. And no, Sean, you can't go just in hope for multiple times.
They won't let you. They won't let you vote multiple times. Yeah.
That's true. So, until next week, this is Middle School Matters for middle school educators.